the 21st of June. Up and by water to Whitehall, there to discourse with George Carteret and Mr. Fenn about office business. I find them all aground, and no money to do anything with. Thence homewards, calling at my tailor's to bespeak some coloured clothes, and thence to Hercules Pillars all alone, and there spent sixpence on myself, and so home and busy all the morning. At noon, to dinner, home, where my wife shows me a letter from her father, who is going oversea and this afternoon would take his leave of her. I sent him, by her, 3 Jacobuses in gold, having real pity for him and her. So I to my office, and there all the afternoon. This day comes news from Harwich that the Dutch fleet are all in sight. Near 100 sail, great and small, they think, coming towards them, where they think they shall be able to oppose them, but do cry out of the falling back of the seamen, few standing by them, and those with much faintness. The like they write from Portsmouth, and their letters this post are worth reading. Sir Hugh Cholmondeley came to me this day, and tells me the court is as mad as ever, and that the night the Dutch burnt our ships, the king did sup with my Lady Castlemaine at the Duchess of Monmouth, and there were all mad in hunting of a poor moth. All the court afeard of a parliament, but he thinks nothing can save us but the king's giving up all to a parliament. Busy at the office all the afternoon, and did much business, to my great content. In the evening sent for home, and there I find my Lady Penn and Mistress Lowther and Mistress Turner and my wife eating some victuals, and there I sat and laughed with them a little, and so to the office again, and in the evening walked with my wife in the garden, and did give Sir William Penn at his lodgings, being just come from Deptford from attending the dispatch of the fireships there, an account of what passed the other day at council touching Commissioner Pett, and so home to supper and to bed. The 22nd of June. Up into my office, where busy, and there came Mistress Daniel, and it is strange how merely the putting my hand to her belly through her coats did make me do. At the office, I all the morning busy. At noon, home to dinner, where Mr. Lewis Phillips, by invitation of my wife, comes, he coming up to town with her in the coach this week, and she expected another gentleman, a fellow traveller, and I perceived the feast was for him, though she doth not say it, but by some mistake he came not, so there was a good dinner lost. Here we had the 2 mercers and Pretty Mary. Much talk with Mr. Phillips about country business, among others that there is no way for me to purchase any several lands in Brampton, or making any several that is not so without much trouble and cost, and it may be not do it neither. So that there is no more ground to be laid to our Brampton house. After dinner, I left them, and to the office, and thence to Sir William Penn's, there to talk with Mistress Lowther, and by and by, we hearing Mercer and my boy singing at my house, making exceeding good music to the joy of my heart that I should be the master of it, I took her to my house, and there merry a while, and then I left them, and at the office, busy all the afternoon, and sleepy after a great dinner. In the evening came Captain Hart and Haywood to me about the 6 merchant ships, now taken up for men of war, and in talk they told me about the taking of Royal Charles, that nothing but carelessness lost the ship, for they might have saved her the very tide that the Dutch came up, if they would have but used means, and had had but boats, and that the want of boats plainly lost all the other ships. That the Dutch did take her with a boat of 9 men, who found not a man on board her, and her laying so near them was a main temptation to them to come on. And presently a man went up and struck her flag and jack, and a trumpeter sounded upon her, "Joan's placket is torn." That they did carry her down at a time, both for tides and wind, when the best pilot in Chatham would not have undertaken it, they heeling her on one side to make her draw little water, and so carried her away safe. They, being gone, by and by comes Sir William Penn home, and he and I together talking. He hath been at court, and in the first place I hear the Duke of Cambridge is dead, which is a great loss to the nation, having, I think, never an heir male now of the kings or dukes to succeed to the crown. He tells me that they do begin already to damn the Dutch, and call them cowards at Whitehall, and think of them and their business no better than they used to do, which is very sad. The king did tell him himself, which is so I was told here in the city, that the city hath lent him £10,000 to be laid out towards securing of the River of Thames, which methinks is a very poor thing that we should be reduced to borrow by such mean sums. He tells me that it is most manifest that one great thing making it impossible for us to have set out a fleet this year, if we could have done it for money or stores, was the liberty given the beginning of the year for the setting out of merchantmen, which did take up, as is said, above 10, if not 15,000 seamen. And this, the other day, Captain Cock tells me, appears in the council books, that is, the number of seamen required to man the merchant ships that had passes to go abroad. By and by, my wife being there, they sat down and ate a bit of their nasty victuals, and so parted, and we to bed. The 23rd of June. Lord's Day. Up and I to my chamber, and there all the morning reading in my Lord Cook's Pleas of the Crown, very fine noble reading. After church time comes my wife, and Sir William Penn, his lady and daughter and Mistress Markham and Captain Hannam, who came to dine with them, by invitation, and dined with me. They as good as inviting themselves. I confess I hate their company and tricks, and so had no great pleasure in it, but a good dinner lost. After dinner they all to church, and I by water alone to Woolwich, and there called on Mr. Bodham, and he and I to see the batteries newly raised, which indeed are good works to command the river below the ships that are sunk, but not above them. Here I met with Captain Cock and Matthew Wren, Fenn and Charles Porter, and Temple and his wife. Here I fell in with these, and to Bodham's with them, and there we sat and laughed and drank in his arbour, Wren making much and kissing all the day of Temple's wife. It is a sad sight to see so many good ships there sunk in the river, while we would be thought to be masters of the sea. Cock says the bankers cannot, till peace returns, ever hope to have credit again, so that they can pay no more money, but people must be contented to take public security, such as they can give them, and if so, and they do live to receive the money thereupon, the bankers will be happy men. Fenn read me an order of council past the 17th instant, directing all the treasurers of any part of the king's revenue to make no payments, but such as shall be approved by the present Lord's Commissioners, which will, I think, spoil the credit of all His Majesty's service, when people cannot depend upon payment anywhere. But the king's declaration in behalf of the bankers, to make good their assignments for money, is very good, and will, I hope, secure me. Cock says that he hears it is come to it now that the king will try what he can soon do for a peace, and if he cannot, that then he will cast all upon the Parliament to do as they see fit, and in doing so perhaps he may save us all. The King of France, it is believed, is engaged for this year, so that we shall be safe as to him. The great misery the city and kingdom is like to suffer for want of coals in a little time is very visible, and is feared will breed a mutiny, for we are not in any prospect to command the sea for our colliers to come, but rather it is feared the Dutch may go and burn all our colliers at Newcastle, though others do say that they lie safe enough there. No news at all of late from Breda what our treaters do. By and by, all by water in three boats to Greenwich, there to Cox, where we supped well, and then late, Wren, Fenn, and I, home by water, set me in at the Tower, and they to Whitehall, and so I home, and after a little talk with my wife, to bed. The 24th of June. Up and to the office, where much business upon me by the coming of people of all sorts, about the dispatch of one business or other of the fire ships, or other ships, to be set out now. This morning Greeting came, and I with him at my flageolet. At noon, dined at home with my wife alone, and then in the afternoon, all the day at my office. Troubled a little at a letter from my father, which tells me of an idle companion, one Coleman, who went down with him and my wife in the coach and came up again with my wife, a pensioner of the King's Guard, and one that my wife indeed made the feast for on Saturday last, though he did not come. But if he knows nothing of our money, I will prevent any other inconvenience. In the evening comes Mr. Povey about business, and he and I to walk in the garden an hour or two, and to talk of state matters. He tells me his opinion that it is out of possibility for us to escape being undone, there being nothing in our power to do that is necessary for the saving us. A lazy prince, no counsel, no money, no reputation at home or abroad. He says that to this day the king doth follow the women as much as ever he did, that the Duke of York hath not got Mistress Middleton, as I was told the other day, but says that he wants not her, for he hath others, and hath alway had, and that he hath known them brought through the matted gallery at Whitehall into his closet. Nay, he hath come out of his wife's bed and gone to others laid in bed for him. That Mr. Brunker is not the only pimp, but that the whole family is of the same strain, and will do anything to please him. That besides the death of the two princes lately, the family is in horrible disorder by being in debt, by spending above £60,000 per annum, when he hath not £40,000. That the Duchess is not only the proudest woman in the world, but the most expenseful, and that the Duke of York's marriage with her hath undone the kingdom by making the Chancellor so great above reach, who otherwise would have been but an ordinary man, to have been dealt with by other people, and he would have been careful of managing things well, for fear of being called to account, whereas now he is secure and hath let things run to rack, as they now appear. That at a certain time Mr. Povey did carry him an account of the state of the Duke of York's estate, showing in faithfulness how he spent more than his estate would bear, by above £20,000 per annum, and asked my lord's opinion of it, to which he answered that no man that loved the king or kingdom durst own the writing of that paper, at which Povey was started, and reckoned himself undone for this good service, and found it necessary then to show it to the Duke of York's commissioners, who read, examined, and approved of it, so as to cause it to be put into form, and signed to it, and gave it the Duke. Now the end of the Chancellor was for fear that his daughter's ill housewifery should be condemned. He tells me that the other day, upon this ill news of the Dutch being upon us, Whitehall was shut up, and the council called, and sat close. And by the way, he doth assure me, from the mouth of some privy councillors, that at this day the Privy Council in general doth know no more what the state of the kingdom as to peace and war is, than he or I, nor knows who manages it, nor upon whom it depends. And there my Lord Chancellor did make a speech to them, saying that they knew well that he was no friend to the war from the beginning, and therefore had concerned himself little in, nor could say much, to it, and a great deal of that kind to discharge himself of the fault of the war, upon which my Lord Anglesey rose up and told His Majesty that he thought their coming now together was not to inquire who was or was not the cause of the war, but to inquire what was or could be done in the business of making a peace, and in whose hands that was and where it was stopped or forwarded, and went on very highly to have all made open to them. And by the way, I remember that Captain Cock did the other day tell me that this Lord Anglesey hath said, within few days, that he would willingly give £10,000 of his estate, that he was well secured of the rest. Such apprehensions he hath of the sequel of things as giving all over for lost. He tells me, speaking of the horrid effeminacy of the king, that the king hath taken 10 times more care and pains making friends between my Lady Castlemaine and Mistress Stuart, when they have fallen out, than ever he did to save his kingdom. Nay, that upon fallings out between my Lady Castlemaine's nurse and her woman, my lady hath often said she would make the king to make them friends, and they would not be friends and be quiet, which the king hath been fain to do. That the king is at this day every night in Hyde Park, with the Duke of Monmouth or with my Lady Castlemaine. That he is concerned of late by my Lord Arlington, in the looking after some buildings that he is about in Norfolk, where my lord is laying out a great deal of money, and that he, Mr. Povey, considering the unsafeness of laying out money at such a time as this, and besides the enviousness of that particular county, as well as all the kingdom, to find him building and employing workmen while all the ordinary people of the country are carried down to the seasides, for securing the land, He thought it becoming him to go to my Lord Arlington, Sir Thomas Clifford By, and give it as his advice to hold his hand a little. But my lord would not, but would have him go on, and so Sir Thomas Clifford advised also, which one would think, if he were a statesman worth a fart, should be a sign of his foreseeing that all shall do well. But I do forbear concluding any such thing from them. He tells me that there is not so great confidence between any two men of power in the nation at this day, that he knows of, as between my Lord Arlington and Sir Thomas Clifford, and that it arose by accident only, there being no relation nor acquaintance between them, but only Sir Thomas Clifford's coming to him, and applying himself to him for favours, when he came first up to town to be a Parliament man. He tells me that he doth not think there is anything in the world for us possibly to be saved by, but the King of France's generousness to stand by us against the Dutch, and getting us a tolerable peace, it may be, upon our giving him Tangier and the islands he hath taken, and other things what he shall please to ask. He confirms me in the several grounds I have conceived of fearing that we shall shortly fall into mutinies and outrages among ourselves, and that therefore he is a treasurer, and therefore much more myself, I say, as being not only a treasurer but an officer of the navy, on whom, for all the world knows, the fault of all our evils are to be laid, do fear to be seized on by some rude hands, as having money to answer for, which will make me the more desirous to get off of this treasurership as soon as I can, as I had before in my mind resolved. Having done all this discourse and concluded the kingdom in a desperate condition, we parted, and I to my wife, with whom was Mercer and Betty Mitchell, poor woman, come with her husband to see us after the death of her little girl. We sat in the garden together a while, it being night, and then Mercer and I a song or two, and then in, the Mitchells home, my wife, Mercer and I to supper, and then parted and to bed. The 25th of June. Up and with Sir William Penn in his new chariot, which indeed is plain, but pretty and more fashionable in shape than any coach he hath, and yet doth not cost him, harness and all, above £32. To Whitehall, where stayed a very little, and thence to St. James's to William Coventry, whom I have not seen since before the coming of the Dutch into the river, nor did indeed know how well to go see him, for shame either to him or me, or both of us, to find ourselves in so much misery. I find that he and his fellow treasurers are in the utmost want of money, and do find fault with Sir George Carteret, that having kept the mystery of borrowing money to himself so long, to ruin of the nation, as William Coventry said in words to William Penn and me, he should now lay it aside and come to them for money for every penny he hath, declaring that he can raise no more, which, I confess, doth appear to me the most like ill will of anything that I have observed of William Coventry, when he himself did tell us on another occasion at the same time that the bankers who used to furnish the money are not able to lend a farthing, and he knows well enough that this was all the mystery George Carteret did use, that is, only his credit with them. He told us the masters and owners of two ships that I had complained of, for not readily setting forth their ships, which we had taken up to make men of war, had been yesterday with the King and Council, and had made their case so well understood that the King did owe them for what they had earned the last year, that they could not set them out again without some money or stores out of the King's yards, the latter of which William Coventry said must be done, for that they were not able to raise money for them, though it was but £200 a ship, which doth show us our condition to be so bad that I am in total despair of ever having the nation do well. After talking a while, and all out of heart, with stories of want of seamen, and seamen's running away, and they're demanding a month's advance, and are being forced to give seamen 3 shillings a day to go hence to work at Chatham, and other things that shows nothing but destruction upon us, for it is certain that, as it now is, the seamen of England in my conscience would, if they could, go over and serve the King of France or Holland rather than us, up to the Duke of York to his chamber, where he seems to be pretty easy, and now and then merry, but yet one may perceive in all their minds there is something of trouble and care, and with good reason. thence to Whitehall with Sir William Penn by chariot, and there in the court met with my Lord Anglesey, and he to talk with Sir William Penn, and told him of the masters of ships being with the council yesterday, and that we were not in condition, though the men were willing, to furnish them with £200 of money, already due to them as earned by them the last year, to enable them to set out their ships again this year for the king, which he is amazed at. And when I told him, "My lord, this is a sad instance of the condition we are in," he answered that it was so indeed, and sighed, and so parted, and he up to the council chamber where I perceive they sit every morning, and I to Westminster Hall, where it is term time. I met with none I knew nor did desire it, but only passed through the hall, and so back again, and by coach home to dinner, being weary indeed of seeing the world, and thinking it high time for me to provide against the foul weather that is certainly coming upon us. So to the office, and there William Penn and I did do some business, and then home to dinner, where my wife pleases me mightily with what she can do upon the flageolet, and then I to the office again and busy all the afternoon. And it is worth noting that the King and Council, in their order of the 23rd instant, for unloading 3 merchant ships taken up for the King's service for men of war, do call the late coming of the Dutch an invasion. I was told yesterday that Mr. Oldenburg, our secretary at Gresham College, is put into the Tower for writing news to a virtuoso in France, with whom he constantly corresponds in philosophical matters, which makes it very unsafe at this time to write or almost do anything. Several captains came to the office yesterday and today, complaining that their men come and go when they will, and will not be commanded, though they are paid every night, or maybe. Nay, this afternoon comes Harry Russell from Gravesend, telling us that the money carried down yesterday for the chest at Chatham had like to have been seized upon yesterday in the barge there by seamen who did beat our watermen. And what men should these be but the boat's crew of Sir Freshville Hollis, who used to brag so much of the goodness and order of his men and his command over them. Busy all the afternoon at the office. Towards night, I with Mr. Kynaston to Whitehall about a Tangier order, but lost our labour. Only met with Sir Hugh Cholmondeley there, and he tells me great news, that this day in council the King hath declared that he will call his Parliament in 30 days, which is the best news I've heard a great while, and will, if anything, save the kingdom. How the King came to be advised to this I know not, but he tells me that it was against the Duke of York's mind flatly, who did rather advise the King to raise money as he pleased, and against the Chancellor's, who told the King that Queen Elizabeth did do all her business in 88, without calling a Parliament, and so might he do for anything he saw. But blessed be God it is done, and pray God it may hold, though some of us must surely go to the pot, for all must be flung up to them, or nothing will be done. So back home, and my wife down the water. I sent her with Mistress Hewes and her son Will Hewes to see the sunk ships, while I stayed at the office, and in the evening was visited by Mr. Roberts, the merchant by us, about the getting him a ship cleared from serving the King as a man of war, which I will endeavour to do. So home to supper and to bed. The 26th of June. Up and in dressing myself in my dressing chamber, comes up Nell, and I did play with her and touch her belly and thing, but did not kiss her. So, being ready, I to Whitehall by water, and there to the Lord's Treasurer's chamber, and there wait. And here it is everybody's discourse that the Parliament is ordered to meet the 25th of July, being, as they say, St. James's Day, which every creature is glad of. But it is pretty to consider how, walking to the Old Swan from my house, I met Sir Thomas Harvey, whom, asking the news of the Parliament's meeting, he told me it was true, and they would certainly make a great rout among us. I answered I did not care of my part, though I was ruined, so the Commonwealth might escape ruin by it. He answered, "That is a good one in faith, for you know yourself to be secure in being necessary to the office. But for my part," says he, "I must look to be removed. But then," says he, I doubt not but I shall have amends made me, for all the world knows upon what terms I came in, which is a saying that a wise man would not unnecessarily have said, I think, to anybody, meaning his buying his place of my Lord Berkeley. So we parted, and I to Whitehall, as I said before, and there met with Sir Stephen Fox and Mr. Scowen, who both confirmed the news of the Parliament's meeting. Here I stayed for an order for my Tangier money, £30,000, upon the 11 months' tax, and so away to my Lord Arlington's office, and there spoke to him about Mr. Lanyon's business, and received a good answer, and thence to Westminster Hall, and there walked a little, and there met with Colonel Reams, who tells me of a letter come last night, or the day before, from my Lord St. Albans, out of France, wherein he says that the King of France did lately fall out with him, giving him ill names, saying that he had belied him to our king by saying that he had promised to assist our king and to forward the peace, saying that indeed he had offered to forward the peace at such a time, but it was not accepted of, and so he thinks himself not obliged, and would do what was fit for him, and so made him to go out of his sight in great displeasure. And he hath given this account to the king, which Colonel Reams tells me puts them into new melancholy at court, and he believes hath forwarded the resolution of calling the Parliament, wherewith, for all this, I am very well contented. And so parted, and to the Exchequer. But Mr. Burgess was not in his office, so alone to the Swan, and thither came Mr. Kynaston to me, and he and I into a room, and there drank and discoursed. And I am mightily pleased with him, for a most diligent and methodical man in all his business. By and by to Burgess, and did as much as we could with him about our Tangier order, though we met with unexpected delays in it, but such as are not to be avoided by reason of the form of the act and the disorders which the king's necessities do put upon it. And therefore away by coach and at Whitehall espied Mr. Povey, who tells me is a great secret, which none knows but himself, that Sir George Carteret hath parted with his place of Treasurer of the Navy by consent to my Lord Anglesey, and is to be Treasurer of Ireland in his stead. But upon what terms it is, I know not, but Mr. Povey tells me it is so, and that it is in his power to bring me to as great a friendship and confidence in my Lord Anglesey as ever I was with William Coventry, which I am glad of. And so parted, and I to my tailor's about turning my old silk suit and cloak into a suit and vest. And thence with Mr. Kynaston, whom I had set down in the Strand and took up again at the Temple Gate, home, and there to dinner, mightily pleased with my wife's playing on the flageolet. And so, after dinner, to the office. Such is the want already of coals, and the despair of having any supply, by reason of the enemy's being abroad and no fleet of ours to secure, that they are come, as Mr. Kynaston tells me, at this day, to £5, 10 shillings and no pence per children. All the afternoon busy at the office, in the evening with my wife and Mercer took coach, and to Islington, to the old house, and there ate and drank and sang with great pleasure, and then round by Hackney home with great pleasure, and when come home, to bed, my stomach not being well pleased with the cream we had tonight. The 27th of June. Wakened this morning about 3 o'clock by Mr. Griffin, with a letter from Sir William Coventry to William Penn, which William Penn sent me to see, that the Dutch are come up to the Nore again, and he knows not whether further or no, and would have, therefore, several things done. Ship sunk, and I know not what, which Sir William Penn, who it seems is very ill this night, or would be thought so, hath directed Griffin to carry to the Trinity House. So he went away with the letter, and I tried, and with much ado did get a little sleep more, and so up about 6 o'clock, full of thought what to do with the little money I have left, and my plate, wishing with all my heart that that was all secured. So to the office, where much business all the morning, and the more by my brethren being all out of the way, Sir William Penn this night taken so ill, cannot stir. William Batten, ill at Walthamstow, Sir John Minnis the like at Chatham, and my Lord Brunker there also upon business. Horrible trouble with the backwardness of the merchants to let us have their ships, and seamen's running away, and not to be got or kept without money. It is worth turning to our letters this day to Sir William Coventry about these matters. at noon, to dinner, having a haunch of venison boiled, and all my clerks at dinner with me, and mightily taken with Mr. Gibson's discourse of the faults of this war in its management, compared with that in the last war, which I will get him to put into writing. Thence, after dinner, to the office again, and there I saw the proclamations come out this day for the Parliament to meet the 25th of next month, for which God be praised, and another to invite seamen to bring in their complaints of their being ill-used in the getting their tickets and money, there being a committee of the council appointed to receive their complaints. This noon, Will Hewer and Thomas Hayter both tell me that it is all over the town, and Mr. Pierce tells me also, this afternoon coming to me, that for certain Sir George Carteret hath parted with his treasurer's place, and that my Lord Anglesey is in it upon agreement, and change of places, though the latter part I do not think. This Povey told me yesterday, and I think it is a wise act of George Carteret. Pierce tells me that he hears for certain, fresh at court, that France and we shall agree, and more that yesterday was damned at the council the Canary Company, and also that my Lord Mordaunt hath laid down his commission, both good things to please the Parliament, which I hope will do good. Pierce tells me that all the town doth cry out of our office for a pack of fools and knaves, but says that everybody speaks either well, or at least the best, of me, which is my great comfort, and I do think I do deserve it, and shall show I have. But yet do think, and he also, that the Parliament will send us all going, and I shall be well contented with it, God knows. But he tells me how Matthew Wren should say that he was told that I should say that William Coventry was guilty of the miscarriage at Chatham, though I myself, as he confesses, did tell him otherwise, and that it was wholly Pett's fault. This doth trouble me not only as untrue, but as a design in some or other to do me hurt. For as the thing is false, so it never entered into my mouth or thought, nor ever shall. He says that he hath rectified Wren in his belief of this, and so all is well. He gone, I to business till the evening, and then by chance home, and find the fellow that came up with my wife, Coleman, late from Brampton. A silly rogue, but one that would seem a gentleman, but I did not stay with him. So to the office, where late, busy, and then to walk a little in the garden, and so home to supper and to bed. News this tide that about 80 sail of Dutch, great and small, were seen coming up the river this morning, and this tide, some of them to the upper end of the Hope. The 28th of June. Up and here Sir William Batten is come to town. I, to see him, he is very ill of his fever, and come to town only for advice. Sir John Minnis, I hear also, is very ill all this night, worse than before. Thence, I going out, met at the gate Sir Hugh Cholmondeley coming to me, and I to him in the coach, and both of us presently to St. James's, by the way discoursing of some Tangier business about money, which the want of, I see, will certainly bring the place into a bad condition. We find the Duke of York and William Coventry gone this morning by 2 o'clock to Chatham, to come home tonight, and it is fine to observe how both the King and Duke of York have, in their several late journeys, to and again, done them in the night, for coolness. Thence, with him to the Treasury Chamber, and then to the Exchequer, to inform ourselves a little about our warrant for £30,000 for Tangier, which vexes us that it is so far off in time of payment. Having walked 2 or 3 turns with him in the hall, we parted, and I home by coach, and did business at the office till noon, and then by water to Whitehall to dinner to Sir George Carteret, but he not at home, but I dined with my lady in good company and good dinner. My lady and the family in very good humour upon this business of his parting with his place of Treasurer of the Navy, which I perceive they do own, and we did talk of it with satisfaction. They do here tell me that the Duke of Buckingham hath surrendered himself to Secretary Morris, and is going to the Tower. Mr. Fenn at the table says that he hath been taken by the watch 2 or 3 times of late, at unseasonable hours, but so disguised that they could not know him, and when I came home by and by, Mr. Lowther tells me that the Duke of Buckingham doth dine publicly this day at Wadlow's, at the Sun Tavern, and is mighty merry, and sent word to the Lieutenant of the Tower that he would come to him as soon as he had dined. Now, how sad a thing it is when we come to make sport of proclaiming men traitors, and banishing them, and putting them out of their offices and privy council, and of sending to and going to the Tower. God have mercy on us. At table, my lady and Sir Philip Carteret have great and good discourse of the greatness of the present King of France, what great things he hath done, that a man may pass at any hour in the night all over that wild city, with a purse in his hand and no danger, that there is not a beggar to be seen in it, nor dirt lying in it, that he hath married two of Colbert's daughters to two of the greatest princes of France, and given them portions, bought the greatest dukedom in France and given it to Colbert, and ne'er a prince in France dare whisper against it, whereas here our king cannot do any such thing, but everybody's mouth is open against him for it, and the man that hath the favour also. That to several commanders that had not money to set them out to the present campaign, he did of his own accord send them £1,000 sterling apiece to equip themselves. But then they did enlarge upon the slavery of the people, that they are taxed more than the real estates they have. Nay, it is an ordinary thing for people to desire to give the king all their land that they have, and themselves become only their tenants and pay him rent to the full value for it, so they may have but their earnings. But this will not be granted, but he shall give the value of his rent, and part of his labour too. That there is not a petty governor of a province, nay of a town, but he will take the daughter from the richest man in the town under him that hath got anything, and give her to his footman for a wife, if he pleases. And the King of France will do the like to the best man in his kingdom, take his daughter from him, and give her to his footman, or whom he pleases. It is said that he doth make a sport of us now, and says that he knows no reason why his cousin, the King of England, should not be as willing to let him have his kingdom, as that the Dutch should take it from him, which is a most wretched thing that ever we should live to be in this contemptible condition. After dinner Sir George Carteret came in, and I to him and my lady, and there he did tell me that the business was done between him and my Lord Anglesey, that himself is to have the other's place of Deputy Treasurer of Ireland, which is a place of honour and great profit, being far better, I know not by what reason, but a reason there is, than the Treasurer's, my Lord of Cork's, and to give the other his of Treasurer of the Navy. That the King, at his earnest entreaty, did with much unwillingness, but with owning of great obligations to him for his faithful and long service to him and his father, and therefore was willing to grant his desire. That the Duke of York hath given him the same kind words, so that it is done with all the good manner that could be, and he, I perceive, doth look upon it, and so do I confess, as a great good fortune to him to meet with one of my Lord Anglesey's quality, willing to receive it at this time. Sir William Coventry he hath not yet made acquainted with it, nor doth intend it, it being done purely to ease himself of the many troubles and plagues which he thinks the perverseness and unkindness of Sir William Coventry, and others by his means, hath, and is likely every day to bring upon him, and the Parliament's envy, and lastly to put himself into a condition of making up his accounts, which he is, he says, afeard he shall never otherwise be. My Lord Chancellor, I perceive, is his friend in it. I remember I did in the morning tell Sir Hugh Cholmondeley of this business, and he answered me he was sorry for it, for whatever Sir George Carteret was, he is confident my Lord Anglesey is one of the greatest knaves in the world, which was news to me, but I shall make my use of it. Having done this discourse with Sir George Carteret and signified my great satisfaction in it, which they seemed to look upon as something, I went away, and by coach home and there find my wife making of tea, a drink which Mr. Pelling, the apothecary, tells her is good for her cold and defluxions. I to the office, whither came Mr. Carcass to me, to sue for my favour to him and Sir William Penn's, where I find Mr. Lowther come to town after the journey, and after a small visit to him, I to the office to do much business, and then in the evening to Sir William Batten, to see how he did, and is better than he was. He told me how Mistress Lowther had her train held up yesterday by her page at his house in the country, which is so ridiculous a piece of pride as I'm ashamed of. He told me also how he hears by somebody that my Lord Brunker's maid, hath told that her lady, Mistress Williams, had sold her jewels and clothes to raise money for something or other, and indeed the last night a letter was sent from her to me to send to my lord with about 5 pieces of gold in it, which methought at the time was but a poor supply. I then to Sir William Penn, who continues a little ill, or dissembles it, the latter of which I'm apt to believe. Here I stayed but little, not meaning much kindness in it, and so to the office and dispatch more business, and then home at night, and to supper with my wife. And who should come in but Mr. Pelling, and supped with us, and told us the news of the town, how the officers of the navy are cried out upon, and a great many greater men, but doth think that I shall do well enough, and I think, if I have justice, I shall. He tells me of my Lord Duke of Buckingham his dining to-day at the Sun, and that he was mighty merry, and, which is strange, tells me that really he is, at this day, a very popular man, the world reckoning him to suffer upon no other account than what he did propound in Parliament, to have all men questioned that had to do with the receipt of the taxes and prizes. But they must be very silly that do think he can do anything out of good intention. After a great deal of tittle-tattle with this honest man, he gone, we to bed. We hear that the Dutch are gone down again, and thanks be to God the trouble they give us this second time is not very considerable. The 29th of June. Up, having had many ugly dreams tonight, of my father and my sister and mother's coming to us and meeting my wife and me at the gate of the office going out, they all in laced suits, and come, they told me, to be with me this May Day. My mother told me she lacked a pair of gloves, and I remembered a pair of my wife's in my chamber, and resolved she should have them, but then recollected how my mother came to be here when I was in mourning for her, and so, thinking it to be a mistake in our thinking her all this while dead, I did contrive that it should be said to any that inquired that it was my mother-in-law, my wife's mother, that was dead, and we in mourning for. This dream troubled me, and I waked. Then I dreamed that I had a great pain of the stone in making water, and that once I looked upon my yard in making water at the steps before my door, and there I took hold of the end of a thing and pulled it out, and it was a turd. And it came into my mind that I was in the same condition with my Aunt Pepys, my Uncle Robert's wife, and by and by, on the like occasion, I pulled out something and flung on the ground. It looked like slime or snot, and presently it swelled and turned into a grey kind of bird, and I would have taken it in my hand, and it run from me to the corner of the door, going into the garden in the entry by Sir John Minnis's, and so I waked. These dreams did trouble me mightily all night. Up and by coach to St. James's, and there find Sir William Coventry and William Penn above stairs, and then we to discourse about making up our accounts against the Parliament, and Sir William Coventry did give us the best advice he could, for us to provide for our own justification, believing, as everybody doth, that they will fall heavily upon us all, though he lays all upon want of money. Only a little, he says, if the Parliament be in any temper, may be laid upon themselves for not providing money sooner, they being expressly and industriously warned thereof by him, he says, even to the troubling them, that some of them did afterward tell him that he had frighted them. He says he doth prepare to justify himself, and that he hears that my Lord Chancellor, my Lord Arlington, the Vice-Chamberlain and himself are reported all up and down the coffee-houses, to be the 4 sacrifices that must be made to atone the people. Then we to talk of the loss of all affection and obedience now in the seamen, so that all power is lost. He told us that he doth concur in thinking that want of money doth do the most of it, but that that is not all, but the having of gentlemen captains who discourage all tarpaulins, and have given out that they would in a little time bring it to that pass that a tarpaulin should not dare to aspire to be more than to be a boatswain or a gunner, that this makes the sea-captains to lose their own good affections to the service, and to instil it into the seamen also, and that the seamen do see it themselves and resent it, and tells us that it is notorious, even to his bearing of great ill-will at court, that he hath been the opposer of gentlemen captains. And Sir William Penn did put in, and said that he was esteemed to have been the man that did instill it into Sir William Coventry, which Sir William Coventry did own also, and says that he hath always told the gentlemen captains his opinion of them, and that himself, who had now served to the business of the sea 6 or 7 years, should know a little, and as much as them that had never almost been at sea, and that yet he found himself fitter to be a bishop or pope than to be a sea commander, and so indeed he is. I began to tell him of the experience I had of the great brags made by Sir Hollis the other day, and the little proof either of the command or interest he had in his men, which Sir William Penn seconded, by saying Sir Freshville Hollis had told him that there was not a pilot to be got the other day for his fireships, and so was forced to carry them down himself, which Sir William Coventry says, "In my conscience he knows no more to do, nor understands the river no more, than he doth Tiber or Ganges." Thence I away with William Penn to Whitehall to the Treasury Chamber, but to no purpose, and so by coach home and there to my office to business, and then home to dinner and to pipe with my wife. And so to the office again, having taken a resolution to take a turn to Chatham tomorrow, indeed to do business of the King's, but also to give myself the satisfaction of seeing the place after the Dutch have been here. I have sent to and got Creed to go with me by coach, betimes tomorrow morning. After having done my business at the office, I home, and there I find Coleman come again to my house and with my wife in our great chamber, which vexed me, there being a bed therein. I stayed there a while, and then to my study, vexed, showing no civility to the man, but he comes on a compliment to receive my wife's commands into the country, whither he is going, and it being Saturday, my wife told me there was no other room for her to bring him in, and so much is truth. But I stayed vexed in my closet till by and by my cousin Thomas Pepys of Hatcham came to see me, and he up to my closet and there sat talking an hour or two, of the sad state of the times, whereof we did talk very freely, and he thinks nothing but a union of religious interests will ever settle us. And I do think that, and the Parliament's taking the whole management of things into their hands, and severe inquisitions into our miscarriages will help us. After we had bewailed ourselves, and the kingdom, and very freely, one to another, wherein I do a little blame myself for my freedom of speech to anybody, he gone, and Coleman gone also before, I to the office, whither Creed came by my desire, and he and I to my wife, to whom I now proposed the going to Chatham, who, mightily pleased with it, sent for Mercer to go with her, but she could not go, having friends at home which vexed my wife and me, and the poor wretch would have had anybody else to have gone, but I would like nobody else, so was contented to stay at home on condition to go to Epsom next Sunday, which I will do. And so I to the office to dispatch my business, and then home to supper with Creed, and then Creed and I together to bed, very pleasant in discourse. This day, talking with Sir William Batten, he did give me an account how ill the King and Duke of York was advised to send orders for our frigates and fireships to come from Gravesend as soon as ever news came of the Dutch being returned into the river, wherein no seamen, he believes, was advised with. "For," says he, "we might have done just as Warwick did when he, William Batten, came with the King and the like fleet in the late wars into the river, for Warwick did not run away from them, but sailed before them when they sailed, and came to anchor when they came to anchor, and alway kept in a small distance from them, so as to be able to take any opportunity of any of their ships running aground, or change of wind, or anything else to his advantage. So might we have done with our fireships, and we have lost an opportunity of taking or burning a good ship of theirs, which was run aground about Holehaven. I think," he said, "with the wind, so as their ships could not get her away, but we might have done what we would with her, and it may be done them mischief too, with that wind." This seems very probable, and I believe was not considered. The 30th of June, Lord's Day. Up about 3 o'clock, and Creed and I got ourselves ready and took coach at our gate, it being very fine weather and the cool of the morning, and with much pleasure, without any stop, got to Rochester about 10 of the clock, all the way having mighty pleasant talk of the fate that is over all we do, that it seems as if we were designed in everything, by land, by sea, to undo ourselves. At the foot of Rochester Bridge, at the landing place, I met my Lord Brunker and my Lord Douglas, and all the officers of the soldiers in the town, waiting there for the Duke of York, whom they heard was coming thither this day, and by comes my Lord Middleton, the first time I remember to have seen him, well mounted, who had been to meet him, but came back without him. He seems a fine soldier, and so everybody says he is, and a man like my Lord Tiviot, and indeed most of the Scotch gentry, as I observe, of few words. After staying here by the waterside, and seeing the boats come up from Chatham, with them that rowed with bandoliers about their shoulders and muskets in their boats, they being the workmen of the yard who have promised to redeem their credit, lost by their deserting the service when the Dutch were there, my Lord Brunker went with Lord Middleton to his inn, the Crown, to dinner, which I took unkindly, but he was slightly invited, so I and Creed down by boat to Chatham Yard, our watermen having their bandoliers about them all the way, and to Commissioner Pett's house, where my Lord Brunker told me that I should meet with his dinner, two dishes of meat, but did not. But, however, by the help of Mr. Wiles had some beer and ale brought me, and a good piece of roast beef from somebody's table, and ate well, we two. And after dinner into the garden to show Creed, and I must confess it must needs be thought a sorrowful thing for a man that hath taken so much pains to make a place neat, to lose it, as Commissioner Pett must now this. Thence to see the batteries made, which indeed are very fine, and guns placed so as one would think the river should be very secure. I was glad, as also it was new to me, to see so many fortifications as I have of late seen, and so up to the top of the hill there to look, and could see towards Sheerness to espy the Dutch fleet, but could make none but one vessel, they being all gone. But here I was told that in all the late attempt there was but one man that they know killed on shore, and that was a man that had laid upon his belly, upon one of the hills on the other side of the river, to see the action, and a bullet came and took the ground away just under his belly, and ripped up his belly, and so was killed. Thence back to the dock, and in my way saw how they are fain to take the deals off the rope-house to supply other occasions, and how sillily the country troopers look that stand upon the passes there, and methinks as if they were more willing to run away than to fight. And it is said that the country soldiers did first run at Sheerness, but that then my Lord Douglas's men did run also, but it is excused that there was no defence for them towards the sea, that so the very beach did fly in their faces as the bullets came and annoyed them, they having, after all this preparation of the officers of the ordnance, only done something towards the land, and nothing at all towards the sea. The people here everywhere do speak very badly of Sir Edward Spragg, as not behaving himself as he should have done in that business, going away with the first, and that old Captain Pine, who I am here told, and no sooner, is Master Gunner of England, was the last that stayed there. Thence, by barge, it raining hard, down to the chain, and in our way did see the sad wrecks of the poor Royal Oak, James, and London, and several other of our ships by us sunk, and several of the enemies, whereof three men of war that they could not get off and so burned. We did also see several dead bodies lie by the sides of the water. I do not see that Upnor Castle hath received any hurt by them, though they played long against it, and they themselves shot till they have hardly a gun left upon the carriages, so badly provided they were. They have now made two batteries on that side, which will be very good and do good service. So to the chain, and there saw it fast at the end on Upnor side of the river, very fast, and borne up upon the several stages across the river, and where it is broke, nobody can tell me. I went on shore on Upnor side to look upon the end of the chain, and caused the link to be measured, and it was 6 1/4 inches in circumference. They have burned the crane house that was to haul it taut. It seems very remarkable to me, and of great honour to the Dutch, that those of them that did go on shore to Gillingham, though they went in fear of their lives and were some of them killed, and notwithstanding their provocation at shelling, yet killed none of our people nor plundered their houses, but did take some things of easy carriage and left the rest, and not a house burnt, and, which is to our eternal disgrace, that what my Lord Douglas's men, who come after them, found there, they plundered and took all away. And the watermen that carried us did further tell us that our own soldiers are far more terrible to those people of the country towns than the Dutch themselves. We were told at the batteries, upon my seeing of the field guns that were there, that had they come a day sooner they had been able to have saved all, but they had no orders and lay lingering upon the way and did not come forward for want of direction. Commissioner Pett's house was all unfurnished, he having carried away all his goods. I met with no satisfaction whereabouts the chain was broke, but do confess I met with nobody that I could well expect to have satisfaction, it being Sunday, and the officers of the yard, most of them abroad, are at the Hill House at the pay of the chest, which they did make use of today to do part in. Several complaints I hear of the Monmouth's coming away too soon from the chain where she was placed, with the two guardships to secure it, and Captain Robert Clark, my friend, is blamed for so doing there, but I hear nothing of him at London about it. But Captain Brooks is running aground with the Sancta Maria, which was one of the three ships that were ordered to be sunk to have dammed up the river at the chain, is mightily cried against, and with reason, he being the chief man to approve of the abilities of other men, and the other two ships did get safe thither, and he run aground. But yet I do hear that though he be blamable, yet if she had been there, she, nor two more to them three, would have been able to have commanded the river all over. I find that here, as it hath been in our river, fireships, when fitted, have been sunk afterwards, and particularly those here at the Mussel, where they did no good at all. Our great ships that were run aground and sunk are all well raised but the Vanguard, which they go about to raise tomorrow. The Henry, being let loose to drive up the river of herself, did run up as high as the bridge and broke down some of the rails of the bridge, and so back again with the tide and up again, and then berthed himself so well as no pilot could ever have done better. And Punnett says he would not for his life have undertaken to have done it, with all his skill. I find it is true that the Dutch did heel the Charles to get her down, and yet run aground twice or thrice, and yet got her safe away and have her, with a great many good guns in her, which none of our pilots would ever have undertaken. It is very considerable the quantities of goods which the making of these platforms and batteries do take out of the King's stores, so that we shall have little left there, and God knows no credit to buy any. Besides the taking away and spending of, it is possible, several goods that would have been either rejected or abatements made for them before used. It is a strange thing to see that while my Lord Douglas and Middleton do ride up and down upon single horses, my Lord Brunker doth go up and down with his hackney coach and six horses at the King's charge, which will, for all this time, and the time that he is likely to stay, must amount to a great deal. But I do not see that he hath any command over the seamen, he being affronted by three or four seamen before my very face, which he took sillily, methought, and is not able to do so much good as a good boatswain in this business. My Lord Brunker, I perceive, doth endeavour to speak well of Commissioner Pett, saying that he did exercise great care and pains while he was there, but doth not undertake to answer for his not carrying up of the great ships. Back again to Rochester, and there walked to the cathedral as they were beginning of the service, but would not be seen to stay to church there. Besides, had no mind but rather to go to our inn, the White Hart, where we drank and were fain, the town being so full of soldiers, to have a bed corded for us to lie in, I being unwilling to lie at the Hill House for one night, being desirous to be near our coach to be gone betimes tomorrow morning. Here in the streets I did hear the Scotch march beat by the drums before the soldiers, which is very odd. Thence to the castle, and viewed it with Creed, and had good satisfaction from him that showed it us, touching the history of it. Then into the fields, a fine walk, and there saw Sir Frenchville Clark's house, which is a pretty seat, and then back to our inn and bespoke supper, and so back to the fields and into the cherry garden, where we had them fresh gathered. and here met with a young, plain, silly shopkeeper and his wife, a pretty young woman, the man's name Hawkins. And I did kiss her, and we talked, and the woman of the house, one May, is a very talking, bawdy jade, and ate cherries together, and then to walk in the fields till it was late, and did kiss her, and I believe, had I had a fit time and place, I might have done what I would with her. Walked back and left them at their house near our inn, and then to our inn where I hear my Lord Brunker hath sent for me to speak with me before I go. So I took his coach, which stands there with two horses, and to him and to his bedside, where he was in bed, and hath a watchman with a halberd at his door, and to him and did talk a little, and find him a very weak man for this business that he is upon, and do pity the king's service that is no better handled, and his folly to call away Pet, before we could have found a fitter man to have stayed in his stead. Took leave of him, and with Creed back again, it being now about 10 at night, and to our inn to supper, and then to bed, being both sleepy, but could get no sheets to our bed, only linen to our mouths, and so to sleep, merrily talking of Hawkins and his wife, and I troubled that Creed did see so much of my dalliance, though very little. July 1667. The First. Up betimes about 4 o'clock, waked by a damn noise between a sow gelder and a cow and a dog, nobody after we were up being able to tell us what it was. After being ready, we took coach, and being very sleepy, drowsed most part of the way to Gravesend, and there, light, and down to the new battery, which are like to be very fine, and there did hear a plain fellow cry out upon the folly of the king's officers above, to spend so much money in works at Woolwich and Deptford, and sinking of good ships loaden with goods, when, if half the charge had been laid out here, it would have secured all that, and this place too, before now. And I think it is not only true in this, but that the best of the actions of us all are so silly that the meanest people do begin to see through them, and contemn them. Besides, says he, they spoil the river by it. Then informed ourselves where we might have some cream, and they guided us to one Goody Best's, a little out of the town towards London Road, and thither we went with the coach and find it a mighty clean plain house, and had a dish of very good cream to our liking. And so away presently, very merry, and fell to reading of the several advices to a painter, which made us good sport, and indeed are very witty. And Creed did also repeat to me some of the substance of letters of old Burley in Queen Elizabeth's time, which he hath of late read in the printed Kabbalah, which is a very fine style at this day, and fit to be imitated. With this, and talking and laughing at the folly of our masters in the management of things at this day, we got home by noon, where all well, and then to dinner, and after dinner both of us laid down upon the couch and chairs, and to sleep, which I did for an hour or two, and then to the office, where I am sorry to hear that Sir John Minnis is likely to die this night or tomorrow. I forgot to set down that we met this morning upon the road with Mistress Williams, going down to my Lord Brunker. We bowed without speaking one to another, but I am ashamed at the folly of the man to have her down at this serious busy time, when the town and country is full of people and full of censure, and against him particularly. At Sir William Batten's, my lady tells me that she hears for certain that my lord's maid of his lodgings here doth give out that Mistress Williams hath been fain of late to sell her best clothes and jewels to get a little money upon, which is a sad condition. Thence to the office, and did write to my Lord Brunker to give me a little satisfaction about the certainty of the chains being broke, which I begin to doubt, and the more from Sir William Penn's discourse, it is worth while to read my letter to him entered in my letter-book. Home, in the evening, to supper, and so pretty betimes, about 10 o'clock, to bed, and slept well. This day letters are come that my sister is very ill. The 2nd of July. Up and put on my new silk Camelot suit, made of my cloak, and suit, now made into a vest. So to the office where William Penn and myself and Sir Thomas Harvey met, the first time we've had a meeting since the coming of the Dutch upon the coast. Our only business, for we have little else to do, nobody being willing to trust us for anything, was to speak with the owners of 6 merchantmen which we have been taking up this fortnight, and are yet in no readiness, they not fitting their ships without money advanced to them, we owing them for what their ships have earned the last year. So everything stands still for money, while we want money to pay for some of the most necessary things that we promised ready money for in the height of our wants, as grapnels, etc. At noon, home to dinner, and after dinner my wife and Jane, mighty fine the girl, to go to see Jane's old mistress, who was to see her, and did see my wife the other day. And it is pleasant to hear with what kindness her old mistress speaks of this girl, and how she would still have her, and how the wench cried when she told her that she must come to her old mistress, my wife. They gone, I to my chamber, and there dallied a little with my maid Nell to touch her thing, but nothing more. And so to the office, where busy till night, and then comes Mistress Turner, and walks with me in the garden, to talk with me about her husband's business, and to tell me how she hears at the other end of the town how bad our office is spoken of by the King and Prince and Duke of Albemarle, and that there is not a good word said of any of us but of me, and me they do all speak mightily of, which, whether true or no, I'm mighty glad to hear. But from all put together that I hear from other people, I'm likely to pass as well as anybody. So, she gone, comes my wife, and to walk in the garden, Sir John Minnis being still ill, and so keeping us from singing. And by and by Sir William Penn came and walked with us, and gave us a bottle of cider, and so we home to supper, and I to read myself asleep, and so to bed. This day I am told that poor Tooker is dead, a very painful poor man as ever I knew. The 3rd of July. Up, and within most of the morning, my tailor's boy coming to alter something in my new suit I put on yesterday. Then to the office and did business, and then, my wife being a little ill of those in the bed, I to Sir William Batten's and dined, and there comes in Sir Richard Ford, and tells us how he hath been at the Sessions House, and there it is plain that there is a combination of rogues in the town that do make it their business to set houses on fire, and that one house they did set on fire in Aldersgate Street last Easter, and that this is proved by 2 young men, whom one of them debauched by degrees to steal their father's plate and clothes, and at last to be of their company, and they had their places to take up what goods were flung into the streets out of the windows when the houses were on fire. And this is like to be proved to a great number of rogues, whereof 5... are already found, and some found guilty this day. One of these boys is the son of a Montague, of my Lord Manchester's family, but whose son he could not tell me. This is a strange thing, methinks, but I am glad that it is proved so true and discovered. So home, and to enter my journal of my late journey to this hour, and then to the office, where to do a little business, and then by water to Whitehall, calling at Mitchell's in my way, but the rogue would not invite me in, I having a mind, para ver his wife, and there to the council chamber, to deliver a letter to their lordships about the state of the 6 merchantmen, which we have been so long fitting out. When I came, the king and the whole tableful of lords were hearing of a pitiful cause, of a complaint of an old man, with a great grey beard, against his son, for not allowing himself something to live on, and at last came to the ordering the son to allow his father £10 a year. This cause lasted them near 2 hours, which, methinks, at this time to be the work of the Council Board of England, is a scandalous thing, and methought Sir William Coventry to me did own as much. Here I find all the news is the enemy's landing 3,000 men near Harwich, and attacking Landguard Fort, and being beat off thence with our great guns, killing some of their men, and they leaving their ladders behind them. But we had no horse in the way on Suffolk side, otherwise we might have galled their foot. The Duke of York is gone down thither this day, while the General sat sleeping this afternoon at the council table. The news so much talked of this exchange, of a peace, I find by Sir Richard Brown arises from a letter the Swedes' agent had received from Breda, and showed at court today, that they are come very near it, but I do not find anybody here relying on it. This cause being over, the Trinity House men, whom I did not expect to meet, were called in, and there Sir William Penn made a formal speech in answer to a question of the King's, whether the lying of the sunk ships in the river would spoil the river. But, Lord, how gingerly he answered it, and with a deal of do, that he did not know whether it would be safe as to the enemy to have them taken up, but that doubtless it would be better for the river to have them taken up. Methought the council found them answer like fools, and it ended in bidding them think more of it, and bring their answer in writing. Thence I to Westminster Hall, and there hear how they talk against the present management of things, and against Sir William Coventry, for his bringing in of new commanders, and casting out the old seamen, which I did endeavour to rectify Mr. Mitchell and them in, letting them know that he hath opposed it all his life, the most of any man in England. After a deal of this bibble-babble, I to Mistress Martin's, and there she was gone in before, but when I came, contrary to my expectation, I find her all in trouble, and what was it for, but that I have got her with child, for those do not venir upon her as they should have done, and is in exceeding grief, and swears that the child is mine, which I do not believe, but yet do comfort her that either it cannot be so, or if it be, that I will take care to send for her husband, though I do hardly see how I can be sure of that, the ship being at sea and as far as Scotland. But, however, I must do it, and shall find some way or other of doing it, though it doth trouble me not a little. Thence, not pleased, away to Whitehall to Mr. Williamson, and by my Lord Arlington about Mr. Lanyon's business, and it is pretty to see how Mr. Williamson did altogether excuse himself that my business was not done. And when I came to my lord and told him my business, "Why," says my lord, "it hath been done, and the King signed it several days ago." And so it was, and was in Mr. Williamson's hand, which made us both laugh. And I, in innocent mirth, I remember said, "It is pretty to see in what a condition we are, that all our matters nowadays are undone we know not how, and done we know not when." He laughed at it, but I have since reflected on it and find it a severe speech, as it might be taken by a chief minister of state, as indeed Mr. Williamson is, for he is indeed the secretary. But we fell to other pleasant talk, and a fine gentleman he is, and so gave him £5 for his fee, and away home and to Sir William Batten's to talk a little, and then to the office to do a little business, and so home to supper, and to read myself asleep, and then to bed. The 4th of July. Up and in vain expecting Sir Richard Ford's calling on me, I took coach into the Sessions House, where I have a mind to hear Basil Fielding's case tried, and so got up to the bench, my Lord Chief Justice Keeling being judge. Here I stood bare, not challenging, though I might well enough to be covered. But here were several fine trials, among others, several brought in for making it their trade to set houses on fire, merely to get plunder, and all proved by the two little boys spoken of yesterday by Sir Richard Ford, who did give so good account of particulars that I never heard children in my life. And I confess, though I was unsatisfied with the force given to such little boys to take away men's lives, yet when I was told that my Lord Chief Justice did declare that there was no law against taking the oath of children above 12 years old, and then heard from Sir Richard Ford the good account which the boys had given of their understanding the nature and consequence of an oath, and now my own observation of the sobriety and readiness of their answers, further than of any man of any rank that came to give witness this day, though some men of years and learning, I was a little amazed, and fully satisfied that they ought to have as much credit as the rest. They proved against several, their consulting several times at a bawdy house in Moorfields called the Russia House, among many other rogueries, of setting houses on fire that they might gather the goods that were flung into the streets, and it is worth considering how unsafe it is to have children play up and down this lewd town. For these two boys, one is my Lady Montague's, I know not what Lady Montague, son, and the other of good condition, were playing in Moorfields, and one rogue, Gabriel Holmes, did come to them and teach them to drink, and then to bring him plate and clothes from their father's houses, and carry him into their houses, and leaving open the doors for him, and at last were made of their conspiracy, and were at the very burning of this house in Aldersgate Street on Easter Sunday at night last, and did gather up goods as they had resolved before. And this Gabriel Holmes did advise to have had two houses set on fire, one after another, that while they were quenching of one, they might be burning another. And it is pretty that Gabriel Holmes did tell his fellows, and these boys swore it, that he did set fire to a box of linen in the sheriff's, Sir Joseph Sheldon's, house, while he was attending the fire in Aldersgate Street, and the sheriff himself said that there was a fire in his house, in a box of linen, at the same time, but cannot conceive how this fellow should do it. The boys did swear against one of them, that he had made it his part to pull out the plug out of the engine while it was a-playing, and it really was so. And goods they did carry away in the manner of the setting the house on fire was that Holmes did get to a cockpit, where it seems there was a public cockpit, and set fire to the straw in it, and hath a fireball at the end of the straw, which did take fire, and so it prevailed and burnt the house. And among other things they carried away, he took six of the cocks that were at the cockpit, and afterward the boys told us how they had one dressed. By the same token it was so hard they could not eat it. But that which was most remarkable was the impudence of this Holmes, who hath been arraigned often and got still away, and on this business was taken and broke loose just at Newgate Gate, and was last night luckily taken about Bow, who got loose and run into the river and hid himself in the rushes, and they pursued him with a dog, and the dog got him and held him till he was taken. But the impudence of this fellow was such that he denied he ever saw the boys before, or ever knew the Russia House, or that the people knew him, and by the mistress of the Russia House was called in, being indicted at the same time about another thing, and she denied that the fellow was of her acquaintance, when it was pretty to see how the little boys did presently fall upon her, and ask her how she durst say so, when she was always with them when they met at her house, and particularly when she came in her smock before a dozen of them, at which the court laughed and put the woman away. Well, this fellow Holmes was found guilty of the act of burning the house, and other things that he stood indicted for. And then there were other good cases, as of a woman that came to serve a gentlewoman, and in 3 days run away, betimes in the morning, with a great deal of plate and rings and other good things. It was time very well spent to be here. Here I saw how favourable the judge was to a young gentleman that struck one of the officers, for not making him room. Told him he had endangered the loss of his hand, but that he hoped he had not struck him, and would suppose that he had not struck him. About noon the court rose, and I to dinner with my Lord Mayor and sheriffs, where a good dinner and good discourse, the judge being there. There was also tried this morning Fielding, which I thought had been Basil, but it proved the other, and Basil was killed, that killed his brother, who was found guilty of murder, and nobody pitied him. The judge seems to be a worthy man and able, and doth intend of these rogues that burned this house to be hung in some conspicuous place in the town, for an example. After dinner to the court again, where I hear some more causes, but with so much trouble because of the hot weather, that I had no pleasure in it. Anon the court rose, and I walked to Fleet Street for my belt at the beltmaker's, and so home and to the office, wrote some letters, and then home to supper and to bed. The 5th of July. Up and to the office where Sir William Batten, William Penn, Thomas Harvey, and I met, upon Mr. Gordon's accounts, and was at it all the morning. This morning Sir George Carteret did come to us and walked in the garden. It was to talk with me about something of my Lord Sandwich's, but here he told us that the Great Seal is passed to my Lord Anglesey for Treasurer of the Navy, so that now he doth no more belong to us, and I confess, for his sake I'm glad of it, and do believe the other will have little content in it. At noon I home to dinner with my wife, and after dinner to sing, and then to the office a little, and Sir William Batten's, where I am vexed to hear that Nan Wright, now Mistress Markham, Sir William Penn's maid and whore, is come to sit in our pew at church, and did so while my Lady Batten was there. I confess I'm very much vexed at it, and ashamed. By and by, out with William Penn to Whitehall, where I stayed not, but to the New Exchange to buy gloves and other little errands. And so home and to my office, busy till night, and then walked in the garden with my wife, and then to supper, and to sing, and so to bed. No news but that the Dutch are gone clear from Harwich, northward, and have given out they are going to Yarmouth.